Hank Crawford, Mr. Blues. That's the title of this album. It's the title track of his 1967 album. This is Lead Stories. I'm Yatrice Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday. It's the reason we call it Free Your Mind Friday, for one thing. It's about decluttering, defragging the brain. So much has gone into it. People put things in there, the media put things in there, and you yourself have put a couple of things in there because you've been thinking about things. And now is the time to step up to the plate and free your mind. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And we have so much to talk about. This is your time. You call the shots, you take us where we want to go, or where you think we would want to go, and we'll see how it goes from here. 888-874-4888. It's a great idea to have a place where you know you can exchange thoughts with other listeners and ideas and information. This is how we build community. We get people talking to each other. You don't have to agree. That's not the point. The point is to get into the habit of presenting your point of view and see how it flies. Run it up the old flagpole, see who salutes. All right. Well, it is not too long ago that we had mass killings in this country, and you wouldn't know it. It's a done deal, and now the issue is Epstein, Jeffrey Epstein, and give him 10 days, and then they'll be on to the next thing. It's an amazing thing how this country operates. There is nothing so deep, so profound, that it would really cause people to just stop and ponder what happened and what it means for the country. It just keeps going on. As if, well, you know, we can't stop all day. We can't stop for every shooting, every murder. We've got a life to live, so let's move it on. It's a fascinating thing. Many other countries, you know, people would be buried in their sorrow, not here. So we start off with John from New Jersey. Hello, John. You're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
You sound in good spirits. Is it because it's the weekend of the crash?
No, it's because there's no thunder or lightning right here right now.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good. Every time we have thunder and lightning, my dog runs and hides in the closet. You know, it's
I'm
like.
with the dog. I fully support the dog in this effort.
Right. So do I. They actually have more common sense than most of we do. What are we talking about? We're talking about the problems that we have. It's just
Well,
where
you're
did.
talking about something that you wish to bring to our attention, and you have a particular view about it. So that's the purpose of Free Your
Oh,
Mind
okay.
Friday.
I do have a particular view about that, and that is that the powers that be can't lie fast enough anymore to keep up with all of the lies that they've told in the past. That's basically what the problem is. I mean, I honestly don't believe anything that comes out of their mouths. You can almost look at the opposite of whatever plan they have, and that's really what they're trying to do. So I mean, this has been what I've learned in my 74 years. I don't know what else to say. Yeah, I like to go toe to toe with these people, but they don't fight fair. That's work.
So the powers that be are just habitual liars, and we should not just take their word for anything.
Exactamundo. Exactamundo. That's we can't trust them on anything. Maybe Elizabeth Warren. You know, maybe Elizabeth Warren. She seems to be a straight shooter, and some of the new women, AOC,
the Alexandria Ocasio Cortez.
Yeah, amazing woman. I'd vote for her in a heartbeat to be the president. This woman could put. She's a woman. She's a young woman. She's practically. She's not even hardly a woman. She's so smart. She could fold up 99% of the politicians up there and flush them down the bowl. She's so smart. And that's why everyone is afraid to even go to talk to this woman. So far I've seen her wrap up these congressmen and have them go away with the tails between their legs.
You know something? This is an interesting issue. From the very beginning, she has been viewed as being very capable, very intelligent. But at the same time, she's out there by herself. The establishment in Washington, D.C. has not exactly embraced her. They haven't gone out of their way to make her feel welcome. And she's not the only one. There are a couple of new people in the Congress, and I remarked about it. I thought that the Democratic Party, the first thing they would do is to, you know, formally present the new members and to the public, and you make a speech that says, you know, welcome aboard, and we look forward to working with you and you working with us and us working together to do our work. And we have quite a few things that we are pursuing, but the most important thing would be to welcome them. I thought that was a serious breach of protocol, that, you know, they came in, they got elected, and they came in and they sat down in their offices. And it didn't seem as if the Democratic Party leadership was enthusiastic about the new folks in their ranks. It's so sad. It's tacky behavior, I think.
I couldn't agree more. And the reason being that they're all concerned about their jobs, just like everyone else in this country. They don't want to change the status quo. The status quo is what's paying their paycheck right now. They don't want to disturb that, even though the rest of the country is going to hell in a handbasket. It's a crying shame, is what it is, and I can't wait for the day that people realize this and don't roll over and stand up and fight. That's what really needs to happen. So I can't wait for that day.
Well, thank you, John, for getting us started today.
You're welcome.
Thank you for calling in and sharing your thoughts. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. It's Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories. What's on your mind? All these stories that we've been talking about, some that we haven't yet even touched. I thought there would be a stampede and your reactions to other stories that were already in play. What are you thinking out there? Let's hear you at 888-874-4888. Normally, there would be a stampede trying to get on air, but people are being reticent today for some reason. I'm just the traffic cop. I'm regulating the traffic. So it is your time. Make use of it. Let's hear what you're thinking. You know, there's a lack of ideas. Maybe I could give a prompting. Of course, our famous president. I get tired of talking about Donald Trump. I really am. And what's more depressing is that not only is he president, but people actually allowed it. They actually put him in office. And now we've got to live with the consequences of their action. But I don't know whether in this upcoming election, whether he'll prevail. Right now, according to a poll from his favorite news station, Fox News, he's running behind. And it is beginning to bother some people. Jose from Rosedale, you're on the air.
Greetings, my professor. Hope all is well with you.
Thank you, and with you too.
Thank you. There's been a lot of talk going around about this this vaudeville show that they've been titling debates. And I really don't pay much attention to it because I look at it as something that one of these baseball players said some time ago, Joe DiMaggio or what's the other brother's name? It's like a deja vu all over again. And you talked a lot about a debate.
That's Yogi Berra.
Yes. Thank you. You talked about debates, and I, for quite some time, I've come to the realization that we don't have debates in this country. And it takes me back to many decades ago. I had the opportunity to visit Britain, which was our former motherland, and London to be exact. A friend of mine invited me to a park called Hyde Park.
Yes.
And it happened to be a Sunday. It was a Sunday, yes. And it seemed as if on Sundays, as you were explaining to me, you can have any kind of dialogue in the park. You can besmirch the character of anyone, including the British family, on Sundays in that park, and you're immune from any kind of prosecution or so forth. And my professor there, I've experienced, it was quite an experience to see the people, these are common people and other folks, got on their own soapbox, and they were championing all kind of causes, all kind of philosophical discussions and debates was taking place in that park, and everybody had an audience, and these presenters were prepared to defend their ideas and their philosophies and anything else that goes along with that. They were prepared to defend it by any means necessary, and they were taking on anyone that was willing to challenge him. I've heard some of the most articulate people, common people. There were people from all walks of life, Rastafarian, communists, socialists, atheists. Everybody was there having and it was all in good faith. Nobody was there getting ready to kill anyone or anything like that. And so these are kind of discussions we haven't seen in this country. And I also would like to find out, why is it most of these programs that you see, we have on television and radio and so forth, no, but not even the delegates, they are these people running for office. No one wants to really have a serious discussion on the philosophical differences between the various political and economic systems, communism, socialism, capitalism, and all these things. Nobody wants to spend any time discussing it. So the American people can have an understanding of what these differences are. What are these philosophies about, how they came about, and what is the shortcomings between them? Everybody wants to ram capitalism down the throats of our people with all its shortcomings, and not prepared to have anyone even consider any kind of system. What's his name? He's talking about democratic socialism and all that thing. We had an experience with that in Jamaica with Michael Manley. And this country was instrumental in beating down the Michael Manley government, destroying them, and any other system that comes up that wants to say, well, we want to try things this way, our way. The capitalist system is hell-bent on destroying it to make sure it never sees the light of day. And so these are the problems that I have, and I don't understand why we can't get these kind of discussions going in this country.
So, well, it happens that talk is not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of it has to do, at least with the way that these kinds of things have evolved in the United States,
mm-hmm.
where people, you know, expect to sit at home, turn on a television, and then enjoy a scripted program that is underwritten by advertising and so forth. It's very, very difficult.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean it can't happen at the local level. It happens quite regularly in Manhattan, in the park, where people can just say what they want to say. People listen. But it is not an organized event.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to reach the masses, you're talking money, big, big money.
Mm-hmm.
On a small scale, I think people could manage organizing a debate or a local function where people gather far more easily. But even so, there are so many rules. There are so many impediments to open discussion and debate.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not something that, certainly in recent decades, it's not something that has fired up the imagination of the public.
Mm.
I don't know why, but it would be a good idea if it could be resuscitated and people have a sense of looking forward to these discussions. In Trinidad, where I grew up, this was typical. Every day in Woodford Square, there's some kind of debate going on.
Yes.
And that came out of that same tradition that you referenced earlier. But people are not afraid to get up in the public and state their case and engage people. It's a kind of sport, actually. But that's not the tradition here.
Mm-hmm.
People look at the so-called debates as a spectacle. You know,
yes.
Big lights and the cameras and all of that. And you're paying attention more to all of the frills,
mm-hmm.
and less attention to what is actually being said.
Mm-hmm.
I wish, you know, there would be a firm or a company that could start up just doing this, just encouraging debates. And much with the same excitement as a prize fight, you know.
Yes.
I wish that could happen, but I think we won't see that anytime soon.
And lastly, if I may, I believe that the die is already cast. The Democrats and so forth, they have agreed that Joe Biden is going to be their standard bearer for this other political kerfuffle coming up in the general election. And I think what is up for grabs now is the vice presidency. I think that's the only thing that is up for grabs. And they're deciding now, you know, this whole other thing here will decide who the vice president will be. I don't know. I can't say that they have already decided on that. But I believe that they have decided, Nancy and her folks have decided that Joe Biden is going to be the standard bearer for the Democratic Party.
Well, it may not necessarily work out that way. A lot of things could happen between now and then. For one thing, people have been remarking about it. Joe Biden does not look energetic. He looks lethargic. And he looks like he's making it is a strain on him to keep up. So that may be a problem.
I've never underestimated the ability of the Democrats to shoot themselves in not only in the foot, but in the heart. And I believe, honestly, that that is what is going to happen. I don't know who the VP will be, but I think that is what is best.
It's too soon to call because the Democratic pack now includes what? Biden and Warren and even Kamala Harris is being touted as a contender. And then we have Beto O'Rourke and we have some others coming through. They have some problems in terms of capital to mount a nationwide campaign. The leadership will not go behind them, I don't think, because they're talking a philosophy that the Democratic Party has been staying away from for many, many years because it is too, quote, left, unquote. But and then Sanders, of course, Bernie Sanders. So we don't know. Sanders is the same age as Biden, but he's coming across far more energetic than Biden. So you'll see. We just have to
don't forget that I told you so.
Okay. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, my queen.
Is this Ka or K-A from New Jersey?
Ka, Brother Ka. Wait. Hello, Eugene.
Is it Ka?
Ka, K-H-A. But I told him K-A so he can
understand. Okay. It was spelled a little differently. How you doing?
I'm doing marvelous. And you? It's good to hear you.
I'm hanging in there.
He's hanging in. What I called about was I believe that the phrases that we use is one of the main one that is getting us in so much trouble is white supremacy. What I've come to find out is that we shouldn't use that word because if these people were supreme, they're not God, then they wouldn't have to cheat, lie, steal, do all the things they're doing, even against us, to keep us back. What I believe that's holding us back is not white supremacy, it's white insanity. And I've used that term on Instagram and got thrown off for a week because they don't mind you calling them supreme, but when you label that as insanity, now they have a problem. And I even remember the book by Bobby Wright when he talked about the psychology of Europeans. And so I think that hurts us by using that word supreme because it has them elevated to a level that they don't really belong.
Well, that's on one level. Here's the other part of it. The other part of it is that this is a term they coined themselves.
Right.
Okay. So they coined this term themselves. And I don't know whether you caught the last couple of programs, certainly of 2 days ago, where I repeated a program I did 5 years ago.
With Jeff Kim.
Called the invention of the white race.
Right.
And it explains it in very painstaking detail, how this phrase came about, what it is, just defining it. And it was, I think, for people who didn't realize it, this was a term coined by whites, the white elites.
Yep.
Okay. And it was defining their system that they were developing. Because as we opened the program, I said the author of this book, Theodore Allen, The Invention of the White Race, two volumes, 800 pages. This is extraordinary work. But he starts off by letting us know that when the term started to develop in 1619, there were no white people in America. There were German people. There were Irish people. there were other European people, but they never called themselves white. And then there came a time when it was determined that it was time to build and consolidate some system of control, everything under control. What was the best thing at the time? To bring together these various pockets of whites who were never called white, and to give them a sense of power over everybody else. And that's what white supremacy is. It's not bad manners. It's not people, you know, hating you because of your skin color or anything like that. It was a system of control. So this was very serious. And they named themselves white. That's what they did. We didn't do that. They did that. They are whites. What is that? We don't know. But that's what they felt a need to call themselves, whites. And supremacy indicating they own and control everything and everyone. So this was very serious.
You agree. But one of the definitions in the dictionary is especially over the blacks, is added.
Well, yes, you could say that. But this also happened at a time when everybody was an eligible victim.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody. Native Americans, they wiped them out first because they were here first. Not just the blacks. The blacks only showed up in 1619. By then, there was enough time for this idea to ruminate, to take hold, to be designed, to be perfected. So white supremacy is not a casual label at all, and that was the whole point. I asked for 2 days prior to airing this repeat program with Jeffrey Perry, who is a friend of mine. And Jeffrey Perry did all of the scut work of putting things together, putting all of these notes and the supporting materials together for these two books. He worked very hard with Theodore Allen, and he also put together the compendium of works by Hubert Harrison, one of the greatest radicals out of the Caribbean, who also was a Harlemite. So in this period that we're talking about, not even white supremacists today actually know what white supremacy is. That's the whole joke. They have no idea what it is because they're not well read. They have no idea of the history of white supremacy in this country, how it evolved, what it was for. But they're acting out. People like Donald Trump have, you know, they have no clue about white supremacy.
Mm.
And so we have to understand it. When you understand it, you see how much sense it makes, and you could practically predict what's next, because it becomes logical, the next move. We are in the stage now of white supremacy where anybody could do anything under the umbrella of white supremacy if they are turning their violence towards blacks and Latinos and people of color generally, the poor. These were the original targets of white supremacy, but white supremacy was a capitalist response. This was before slavery. This was no idle idea. This was a scientifically developed formula for how you control everything and everyone who is not, quote, white, unquote. You see that Donald Trump, again yesterday, started talking again about buying Greenland. Buying somebody's country. This is the mentality. It is so natural that he should think this way. Because this has been inculcated in the mind of people who today are called whites. Many of them. Not all of them, of course. But the people who identify with this mentality and this belief system, it's natural. But we should, everybody should get an appreciation of how far this concept was taken and how it gave permission for some of the most outrageous things. Masculines, you're talking about masculines? Going back to the 16 and 17 and 1800s, we had the extinction of many people who were the first people living here under this concept, under this laissez-faire business of white supremacy. So we got to get to learn it better, because you'll see what the mentality was and still is. And because this wasn't, casual, this was actually written down. People developing policies that today you see reflected even in some unions. It's the same policies.
Mm-hmm.
It tackled everything. Who could own land? Who can have employment and whose labor was to be for free? Who could be sent out of the country for any reason? Who could be killed? The court system, all of this infused with the thinking of white supremacy from the 1600s. That's what I want to impress upon people. This wasn't a casual thing. It's not a kind of racial tension between whites and everybody else, and particularly whites and people of color. That's what the ignoramuses that are part of this ultra right wing, that's what they think. But that's not really how it started out. It was codified. It wasn't left to chance. Here is what white supremacy is, and here's why we need it. We are to develop in an orderly fashion, because the ultimate goal that we should have, this is how they are talking to the public, our ultimate goal should be control of everything and everyone who is not white. So they invented the white race. That's the name of the book. The invention of the white race. That happened here in the United States of America.
Okay, thank you.
You don't sound too thankful. You sound like, homework.
I agree with you. And I know Mr. Perry personally too, but even as this is what they do, I still say it's insane, because they don't look at other people as humans. And so that is their thing. So I'm just saying that we need to redefine it. That's how they define themselves, but it's hitting us as they're insane.
But it's an excellent definition, though. Mm-hmm. You may not agree, but they are precise. What I'm trying to communicate is they sat down and thought about this, and they came up with a system to address the full range of issues they saw as being priority items. And they came up with a white supremacist system, which works on even today, of course. But from the 1600s, would anybody believe that people sat down and figured a way to control everything and everyone and come up with a system to do just that? And the first thing they had to do was to rename themselves. They were no longer German, or they were no longer British, or no longer European. They were white. They invented a whole race that never existed. Put a name on it, white. Now that should tell us something, that this is not a joke. This is so serious that they felt compelled to formulate a system that works even today. There's been no major overhauling of anything. It's the same system. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you again, Trees.
Ka second we.
Yes.
All right. Why didn't you say the second we part?
Yeah.
How are you?
Again.
Oh, my gosh. I'd love to see you sometime soon. And all the folks in Jersey.
Yeah, hope we can make that happen.
Oh, well, tell us a bit of what you've been doing. You've been very much involved in the community. You've done a number of things. You had a library. You started producing honey. You started taking care of the children and feeding the children. How are things?
Thank you. Things are great. We have a young girls program every month, a free young girls program. We do a free beginner sewing class. We still do organic farming. We have an organic garden. We're getting ready to do a young boys program. I'm getting ready to set up something on a smaller level like PRN Radio in there. We do overnight camping trips and go on lean-tos. We take people out the city. We do a lot. We're getting ready to form another company to buy more property in Newark. So I think that's probably the good stuff. We have a roundtable meeting every month with all the police in the community and all the community people come in to find out what's happening inside our neighborhood and what are they doing to address it and what we want them to do. And we have a lot of organizations that I work with now that I came up with. And we have a forum tomorrow dealing with economic freedom. We have yoga.
That you're still out there, still working hard in the community, still doing things for the community. I'm so glad to know you.
Thanks. Let me just say this. We have, I think, the top yoga teacher probably in the state of the country. She don't just teach yoga. She does brain exercises to help people get in from dementia, Alzheimer's, and she does anti-aging, all in the same thing. We have a sister that does doula. We have a lot of different people now inside the organizations that have skills, and they offer them to the community.
Oh, wow. That's exciting. I remember when all you had was a big old empty space.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out what to build here. Oh, that's great. That's great. I'm so glad to hear from you today. And let's keep in touch.
We sure will. Thank you so much.
All right. Nathaniel from California, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Retreats, and happy Friday, and greetings to everyone in and on and listening to PRN everywhere.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You know, I've listened to you for years, and all this week about the subject that we've been discussing from the last caller, and I think the caller or two before. You know, to me, I just want to put this out there because we've discussed the way that white supremacy was invented and has worked over the years. You know, if white supremacy was so good, and that if that came from people that were superior with superior capabilities, why don't we see superior things flowing from them? Why don't we see miracles in biology, leaps forward in physics? Why don't they have a colony on Mars and making superior science discoveries and so on and so forth? I don't see anything superior coming from these supposedly supreme and superior things, beings. All I see is negativity, destruction, World War One, World War Two, this war, that war, and the war, and so on and so forth. Why can't we get something superior from them rather than just anti-progress, anti-socialism, anti-economics, anti-this and anti-that?
I think you can answer the question yourself. You're looking at a bizarre start that these folks had in the 1600s. What they came up with or what they went after was not normal. They had no desire to share anything with anybody. They had no desire to live in harmony with anybody. That was not part of the program. Their idea was, we can set ourselves up as the dominant force, laying claim and ownership of everything that we deem to be important and necessary for our survival. And that was a formula that also gave the added benefit of controlling other people. Because who knows? They may get a little upset that we are progressing with our formula, and they'll want to attack us. So we have to be prepared. You become paranoid. You become warlike. You look at people or a people in terms of, what do you have that I can take?
Right.
I mean, our president
right.
just said that this week. I want to buy your island. And they said, well, we're not for sale. But
yes.
Imagine that mentality. It's as current as it was back in the 1600s. It's what's ruling the world.
Yes. But I don't think they realize, I think what I'm trying to say, I don't think that these supremacist beings realize that they're, in fact, impeding human progress for themselves and well as others and everybody else.
The human progress. They're not interested in that.
Yes,
they don't
correct.
Care about human progress.
Mathematics and science.
Only in
yes.
their own.
We should have twice or three times the amount of engineers. We need something superior to Microsoft. We need the next phase of human development to come. And they're holding it
yep.
back. And they're thinking, oh, we're superior. It's just crazy.
Well,
anyway,
they're not necessarily holding, quote, us back. What is happening is that over time, people actually allowed themselves to be co-opted because they wanted to belong to something powerful and all-controlling and white. They didn't believe, because, of course, people are ignorant. They don't know the real situation, that the real thought process that backs up white supremacy. So they lent their
yes.
support to it, whether tacitly or actively. They saw that they too had something to gain. They had preference in society for jobs. They had nicer places to live. Their children went to better schools. So they were attracted to a system. It didn't present itself as a system, but everybody understood what was going on. And they bought into it. They gave their support to a system that actually was about worldwide domination. And only now and then did they see glimpses of it, but they ignored it. When you take a look at housing, who got housing? Even subsidized housing, who got it?
Right.
They bought it.
Yes. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was waiting on you.
Oh, I was just going to say that my line of thinking is the same, I think, as what you and all the other callers are trying to illustrate. It's that they may be getting the best breaks, but they're not. The rest of society is falling apart. It's crazy.
They don't
Everyone
care.
Should be allowed to fulfill their human potential, and society overall would be better for it, not just these supremacy folks.
Well, the thing is that many supremacists don't see themselves as that. They see themselves as, they in fact see themselves as different from supremacists. They, compared to supremacists, they would likely describe themselves as progressives, as people with vision. But when you start digging and you start asking some pointed questions and you observe how they function in the world, you see it's the same premise, perhaps diluted 10% or diluted 20%, but it's still, I have the better job. I have the better neighborhood. My children have better schools. It's the same idea.
Yes.
I'm not concerned about the suffering of others.
Right. Exactly. But is that humane? Is that humane outlook to have, that they have? I don't think so. It doesn't seem humane to me.
But it is human. Especially when you are shaped by certain forces, that becomes your version of humanity. You're not doing anything extraordinarily out of sync or out of line. You're just like your neighbor next door.
Yeah.
Buffy and Biff.
mm-hmm.
This is what they practice. You know, this is how they live their lives. It's normal. And they have no idea. Or they have some idea, but they wouldn't do it if they were bad people. That's the thing.
In their own minds. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. To justify the fact that they don't want to hear the truth of what they actually are practicing. They're not interested in that.
Correct. Correct. And there we sit, and there we shall be until a revelation comes from somewhere.
Well, that's the hope, that we can get a revelation, and quickly we need it. Thanks, Nathaniel, for calling in today. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, you Trace. Sorry, but I missed the seminar yesterday. I had an appointment, so I hope I'm not going to be talking about something that was already covered. As I think about this whole discussion, I think the real takeaway message for this, and understanding this concept of white supremacy, is to recognize this has been the major tactic in this capitalist society to separate the workers in this society and engineered by the ruling class. The main job of the ruling class, that is the people who control the economics, politics, the social structure, the military, to win as a capitalist society and make the maximum profit for themselves, is to divide the working class. And during that time, during the 1600s and 1700s, when this policy of white supremacy was codified, they saw that as an excellent way to break up and do a super divide and conquer, which is in effect to this very day. So white supremacy is, to me, mostly a way to divide people up so those who rule, the ruling class who really run the country, it's not democracy, will get the maximum profit from the people who do the work, who create the wealth, and also be able to get the natural resources that are on the land. So number one thing is for everyone to remember, white supremacy is a tactic by the ruling class to divide people up and create this false notion of a phenotype being a race, and what we have now with this whole situation where people have made this identification as so-called white and whatnot, that is ridiculous. It's a tactic by those who rule. I think that's very important for people to understand.
Now, people would be shocked, even as they try to understand. They would be shocked. And this could not have been the case, that people would sit down and actually plan, develop a plan of how you do that. And all these years ago, in the 1600s till now, it's working quite well, producing the predictable results that they were after. Doing it, it's working.
Right. Well, people must not underestimate the wickedness, and I underline wickedness, of those who rule in this capitalist system. This is about profit for the few at the expense of the many. Mm-hmm. Profit at the few for the few at the expense of money. And the tactic of the invention, which Theodore Allen brings out quite well in his books, is a tremendous topic. And just like the previous discussion that I had with a caller before, it's just a wonderful tactic that the people with that phenotype, that pinker skins, straight hair, and sharp features, bought into by the ruling class on the basis of similarities of their skin color and so forth. But the ruling class and the working class are not the same people. So
not at all.
You have the workers identifying on that basis of their looks with those who rule, and it's working quite well. So you have these ignorant people hooping and hollering for Donald Trump, and it just amazes me that they don't understand that he's not on their side. And, you know, it works so well. It shows the danger and the ability of those who rule to manipulate things so that they can maintain their increase in profit, which is the goal of a capitalist society, and this society in particular. So I think that's important to recognize what it is, and it's a number of things, but I think we have to realize that it is the ruling class that is benefiting mostly for that. And the ruling class, in addition, controls the one-party system that we have called Democrat-Republican. They're the same people that represent those who rule, and they're in two divisions, and they pretend that they're operating in some kind of democratic system, which does not exist. This is a
Well, you know, this is a good thing. When you, the good thing about learning is that when you find out the facts and you see exactly how people were thinking and plotting and planning, it's inescapable. There's no point in debating as to whether this was intended or not. They intended it because they sat down and they figured out a system and invented a race. Totally.
Exactly.
Just invented it. Mm-hmm. And then began all of the other ancillary things to shore up the most bizarre and indefensible idea.
Yes.
And it continues till today. So what I'm saying is that when I was asking people to define it, look how much difficulty we had with just arriving at a definition, because people had an entirely different idea of what white supremacy is. Just hateful people doing really bad things to other people. No, it's not as simplistic as that.
We've run
out of time, I'm afraid. I always enjoy being in your company. I consider myself one of the luckiest people in the world to have access to you and to listen to your instruction, which is education. We are educating each other, and I think this is the way to go. I've thought this many, many years, and I'm glad that it still obtains, it still is true, that our great defense, one of our greatest defenses, is actually just talking to each other. Have yourselves a good weekend. Surround yourselves with people who bring positive dimension to your life, and we'll see each other Monday.